What's up, everybody? I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. And on this episode of Baseball Barbecast, we are previewing the American League East, which, if I understand this correctly, has a few teams that there are some people that they care about this team a lot. Yeah. Jake, what do we got?
I believe that is correct. Are the Red Sox worth watching, or should you just wait for the Netflix doc? Who are the anonymous individuals on the Rays that will carry them to 105 wins? The Toronto Blue Jays have Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette. Is that enough? Should the Yankees worry about Gerrit Cole's injury? And do the Orioles have enough arms to go the distance? All that and a whole lot more on this episode of Baseball Barbecast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbecast, the only baseball podcast in the world that, according to my mom, sounds, quote, more businesslike recently. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And we apologize for being so formal.
Yeah, that's interesting feedback. Love Jake's mom, obviously. My parents were visiting me this weekend because it was my birthday yesterday. And it was very nice to have them here visiting me in the Midwest. And my mom's feedback usually is too much baseball. Talking too much about baseball, which I've said, like, listen, like, I know we try to branch out and, you know, talk about, you know, weddings and stuff like that with secret weddings, secret marriages, whatever. Listen, we're going to cover as many human interest stories as possible. But ultimately, mom, if you're listening to this, this episode is going to be about ball because we about to preview the American League East.
There will be nothing on here about the Oscars or missing members of the British royal family. If you want to talk about that, respective moms, you can call us. You have our info. You have our numbers. We're more than happy to talk to you about those things in a different forum.
Yeah. Yeah. And no shortage of podcasts, too, that are covering those topics, I would imagine. But I appreciate the support. And if you think we're doing too much baseball, let us know. BaseballBarbecast@gmail.com is where you can reach us. But today, on this Monday, we begin our division previews. This is how we've done it on the podcast in the past. We want to try and talk about every team. And so this is how we're going to do it. We are going to kind of cover each team in every division pretty much the same way, ask some questions about them. Big questions about them. How confident are we? How worried are we? Key players and all that jazz. I know we have some other news in the baseball world. We're going to try and cover it within these division previews. Maybe we'll have some time to cover some extra stuff as we go along. But Jake, the season's starting soon. So we got to preview it. It's got to happen.
Got to get rolling. And we will begin with the American League beast, the behemoth. I think I called this once the SEC of MLB. It just means more. Maybe that is East Coast bias. Ever since the Rays stopped being a joke in like 2006 or 7, the AL East kind of elevated itself from Yankees and Red Sox are good and the Blue Jays are tough to like always really good. And in a year last season where the Orioles won, it has set expectations and like everyone else is mad. All the other fan bases get mad when the Orioles win the division because it's like, oh man, we really got to get back on our game. We can't be letting the Orioles win.
Yeah, and again, it is still strange to come off a season with the Yankees and Red Sox finishing in fourth and fifth, which I believe had never happened or maybe had happened like once since they had been in the same division. But we are going to go from bottom to top here. We are going to start, I guess, from both projections or last year's standings. I think we're going to go, I guess, more so projections and over-unders. We're going to go from bottom to top. So we are going to start with the Boston Red Sox. And let's do it. Where do you want to begin with Boston? When, how are we, I guess, do you want to talk about how we're going to structure each of these previews?
For each team, we will say how they do last year, what they do over the winter, and who they got. Run through the starting lineup. We will ask one big question about the team, mention a key player, and then talk about something that makes us laugh about this team before letting you know about the over-under for the season using the Vegas line on BetMGM. Jordan Schusterman, the Boston Red Sox have the lowest projected win total at 77.5. Last year, how'd they do? They went 78-84 in what was a truly irrelevant, forgotten blast of a season. They fired Chief Baseball Officer Chaim Bloom down the stretch in September, replacing him over the winter with Craig Breslow, former MLB pitcher. Their offseason was highly previewed and much maligned after Tom Werner, team president, said, or team chairman, whatever the title is, said that the team was going to go full throttle. Instead, they went somewhat throttle, signing Lucas Giolito to a 2-year contract. He has since hurt his elbow and does not seem like he's going to pitch for quite a while. They extended Brian Bayo last week, but besides that, their offseason was quite shoddy. Anything else on that? Now, again, there's still a chance to sign Jordan Montgomery. It's the world's most boring will they, won't they ever. Time will tell.
Yes. They also traded Chris Sale away, which is a pretty big decision for Vaughn Grissom, who I know is injured to start the season. Then Tyler O'Neill, another addition to their lineup. But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty quiet offseason, but they were in the news for better or for worse. We're going to get to some of the Netflix stuff in a little bit. But it was, as far as vibes go, bottom five in the league for what their offseason losers, right? I mean, I think they're pretty clearly in that bucket. Now, they're coming off a last place season. I think the big picture thing with the Red Sox we always have to remember is, as we transition to who's on their team, is they're not that bad. Like, I look at their roster, and I know there's a lot of pitching question marks, which is fine, but we have to view them through the lens of the division, which is the only way we can, right? And through the lens of the division, they don't look very good. Through the lens of the larger league, yeah, they don't suck. They just don't. They don't suck. They have some things I like.
There are so many baseball teams that are definitively worse than this baseball team. And that's important to understand. Like, last year, they won 78 games, which for this team is a catastrophe. There are a lot of teams that would have been amped about 78 wins, okay? Now, I understand it's a different world at Fenway Park, but that's just important to understand. Let's run through the projected starting lineup. Behind the dish is going to be a Connor Wong, Reese McGuire tandem. First base, Tristan Casas, who we think has a chance to really blossom into one of the better first basemen in the league. Second base, once he gets healthy, will be Vaughn Grissom, but I think it's going to be Emmanuel Valdez to start the year. Rafael Devers, face of the franchise at third base. Trevor Story at short, finally healthy, hopefully for a full season. The outfield will be the ripped version of me. Tyler O'Neill in left. Jaron Duran, the ripped version of someone else in center field. And right field will be a bizarre combination of Willier Abreu, Rob Refsnyder, and Sedan Rafaela whenever he gets more playing time. The DH will be Masataka Yoshida. Thankfully, we don't have to watch him play defense anymore because that was not enjoyable. Starting rotation, the aforementioned Brian Bayo. Lucas Giolito, probably not. Nick Pivetta, Cutter Crawford, Tanner Houck, Garrett Whitlock, Josh Winkowski, ? Not exactly a shutdown group. Isaiah Campbell, Chris Martin, and Kenley Jansen will be in the bullpen. Not too shabby there. Any thoughts about the starting lineup?
Yeah, I mean, it's an offensive group that I can imagine being pretty excited about. With Casas, with Devers, with Trevor Story, who again has had some weird injuries, but we have seen him be, you know, pretty good at times, and we haven't fully seen him like fully blossom, you know, with Boston. And I'm in on O'Neill this year. So I don't know. I like this group. Again, when you're comparing it with the rest of the division, maybe it's merely okay. But offensively, I think there's still reasons to be decently optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, it was a league average offense last year, you know, and I think it can be better than that this year if you project for a full year of Casas being like a dude. The one big question we have, though, for this group, how good is the group of players under 26 years old?
Yeah, I mean, I just mentioned some of them. I just think Casas is such a massive part of this. Like, he was one of the best hitters in baseball in the second half, and when you have stretches like that, especially when your season's already over, it's easy for people to not really notice. But if Tristan Casas is one of the best first basemen in the league, that's a big deal, right? And like, there's a very real chance that is the case. And so if we start to accept that as our reality, and you accept that or believe in the outfield as being a promising group, guys like Willie Abreu and Rafaela, who, you know, have been super productive in the upper minors, we'll see if it translates to the big leagues. I just feel like the younger guys, though, like, in terms of, and Grissom's such a big part of it, and the fact that he's going to be injured to start the year really sucks for obvious reasons, but also because I was so excited to see how that trade was going to bounce. A lot of Chris Sale hype going on, and I understand, you know, maybe why they did that, but for a one-for-one trade, it's all about Grissom, and we got to see what he is going to do. Was he indeed blocked in a way that made sense for Atlanta, or was Atlanta right to say, you know what, we don't actually think he's going to be that good? Because he could make them look pretty freaking smart if he looks like he can be the second baseman of the future, but obviously off to a tough start with the injury.
I'm just a little skeptical about the bottom half of this lineup right now. I'm lower than you on O'Neill, but I think for the Red Sox to be good in 2025, they need that young core to really prove itself. Now, I know I included, it's crazy that Jaron Duran is older than Devers, by the way.
Yeah. Yes.
Like in my mind, I was like, oh, 26 and under, Jaron Duran. Like Duran's part of that group too. Duran, Casas, Grissom, Rafaela, Abreu, Brian Bello. Like, is that a bunch of low end regulars, or is there a star in that group? And I think this season will help us learn what the deal is there.
Let's talk about the key players. You listed Brian Bello, you know, coming off the extension, a lot of hype. Very cool, by the way, to see the Red Sox down playing in Santo Domingo. A lot of cool scenes from those games. Brian Bello's doing his, you know, his contract extension press conference in DR is very cool as well. But yeah, Bello he's the guy. I mean, we just talked about him with the extension news. But I would say if this rotation has any hope of being competent, it's obviously going to start with him.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is like without Giolito, this rotation is lacking a dude. Now, I know Lucas wasn't that last year, but he has been that in the past. Cutter Crawford, Tanner Houck, Garrett Whitlock, Nick Pivetta are all solid options. None of them is going to dominate. And Bello has a chance to do that if he takes a step forward. If the Red Sox want to compete this year, they need him to be that guy. Jordan, you have Casas on here as your key player. You talked about him a little bit.
Well, I was going to say, like, I already talked about Casas. I want to talk about Yoshida because he was someone that his signing was such a big deal last year. And it was like, oh, my God, they overpaid like crazy. This is ridiculous. And then he was tearing it up for a month and a half. And it was like, oh, my God, they were right. The Red Sox were all about it. This guy's going to be an all-star hitter. And then it went south. Now we're in a situation. Now, he's still finished with an above average line because his OBP skills are so good. But now if he is going to be a full-time DH, one, okay, we don't have to worry about him being a bad defender, but now the pressure is all the way on, like, all right, dude, like, what kind of major league hitter are you? Clearly, he is good enough to be a major league hitter, but what is the ceiling here? Because the power and the success against lefties was just all over the place during the season. And so I'm not giving up on him. I just am really curious to see what it looks like in terms of a power production this year.
He can't hit 15 home runs and be an everyday DH.
Probably not.
Right? That's hard to justify. And you mentioned the splits, right, against lefties and righties. I'm curious what that actually was.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that bad. It's just, again, it was really more about the power than the splits, I would say. Like, the splits actually, OPS-wise, were not that bad. But it's, to your point, right? I mean, we gotta get to 20 homers. Or you got to walk more, right? Like, he's obviously pretty good at not striking out. That's very clear. But if he's not coupling that with getting on base in other ways, it's a very strange offensive profile, which I guess we sort of expected. But now if he's a DH, the pressure is really on for that to be the case.
Jordan, what makes you laugh about the 2024 Boston Red Sox?
I mean, everything about this Netflix doc. I'm curious how much of a story it is during the season. Like, I imagine the people who are covering the Red Sox on a regular basis will very much experience it and see the cameras and understand how much it's around. Now, obviously, a lot of it is the behind-the-scenes stuff, so we're not necessarily seeing it. We're not going to see this for a long time, right? So it's like, I guess I'm curious, will it actually impact the season in any sort of tangible way? I can't decide whether we're overrating or underrating that part of it. But obviously, I'm looking forward to watching it, whether they win 100 games or lose 100 games.
I can't decide whether the Netflix doc is going to make me watch more or less of the Red Sox this year. Because on one hand, it's like I need to study so that I can enjoy the finished product. But on the other hand, it's like, why would I watch this? There's going to be a docuseries about every twist and turn. I don't.
That's true. It's like, oh, I literally never have to watch the Red Sox because I'll just get it in Netflix form. Fair question.
Over under is 77.5. I will take the under.
Yeah, so they're projected, you know, Pecota and Fangraphs has them closer to 80, but again, adjusting for the division, it's, and just where the pitching is at right now, I think I'm also taking a slight under. And to me, it's not because I think they're going to be that bad. I just think it's just it's just too many games in the division that I think they're going to lose. So I don't think they're going to be one of the worst teams in baseball, but I think 78 wins is going to be tough considering the circumstances.
One last thing to keep an eye on with the Red Sox is Alex Cora, final year of his contract, manager of the Red Sox. If this goes south, like, that could definitely be it. If Craig Breslow wants to bring in his own guy for next season, I could see a scenario where Cora finds it a gig somewhere else in 2025.
Or if they're just like 20 games out and he just is like, peace, I'm out of here. I don't think he would do that because Alex Cora loves ball too much. I don't think he's going to give. I don't think Alex Cora is going to give away any, no matter how bad his team is. I think he's going to want to manage. And I think Alex Cora is a good manager. So it would be interesting if they choose to go another direction. But I do agree that is definitely another storyline to watch.
All right, let's move on to the Tampa Bay Rays, who they always win 89 games, no matter who's on the team. They did that last year. They actually won more.
They won 99 games.
They won 99 games last year.
This is, again, this team has won, again, since, so they went 80 and 82 in 2017. Since then, 90, 96, they went 40 and 20 in the shortened season, go to the World Series, 100 in 2021, 86 in 2022, and then back up to 99 in 2023. So we're going to get into some of your skepticism about this team, but I ain't betting against the Rays at this point. So that's what they did last year. What did they do this offseason?
Well, you forgot that they went to the playoffs and lost two games against the Rangers. The Rangers ended up winning the World Series, so it doesn't look as bad. But the Rays got freaking pantsed at home, scoring one run across two games. They've scored two runs in their last four postseason games total, dating back to the disaster at Progressive Field in 2022. This offseason, what'd they do? They signed Shohei Ohtani, right?
No, that's not what happened.
Oh, okay.
They made very few major additions. They made an interesting trade where they brought in Jose Caballero from the Mariners, traded away Luke Raley. But other than that, I mean, and I guess they signed Amed Rosario. That happened pretty late, and he's looking very terrifyingly good in spring training. But other than that, Phil Maton, bringing in a couple other depth pieces. They traded Tyler Glasnow away. So they traded Tyler Glasnow away for Ryan Pepiot, who is probably going to be their three or four starter. And then Johnny DeLuca, we'll see if he makes their outfield. So once again, DeLuca's hurt. Okay, so yeah, He's not going to be a part of that. But Pepiot, of course, will be a big part of the rotation this year. But the offense looks very similar. We know Wander Franco's not there anymore. But the rest of the lineup, which, by the way, you mentioned the disaster in Cleveland. What was so frustrating and disappointing about how 2023 ended is that we thought that offense was actually good. The team that they went into the playoffs with in 2022, it was like, okay, yeah, I'm not shocked they didn't score any runs. This group was one of the best offenses in baseball for 2 months. I know they tailed off a little bit, but it just didn't happen. And they got really, really embarrassed against Texas. But they're running it back for the most part offensively. And we can get into, so yeah, who's on this team? Who's on this team? Give me the lineup.
Behind the dish is a very bizarre tandem of Rene Pinto and Alex Jackson, neither of whom have ever been an everyday starter in the big leagues. The Rays are confident that they will get enough defense from those two to make the offensive struggles worth it. This is one of my biggest areas of skepticism about them. First base, Yandy Diaz, one of the best hitters in the world. More on that in a second. Second base, Brandon Lau. Third base, Isak Paredes, who was sneaky good last year. Shortstop, as you mentioned, Wander Franco. The consensus is he's never going to play Major League Baseball again. And so the Rays are going to run with Amed Rosario, Jose Caballero, and eventually Junior Caminero, their top prospect, one of the top prospects in baseball. The outfield will be Randy Arozarena, Jose Siri, and Josh Lowe. DH is going to be a timeshare situation between Jonathan Aranda and Harold Ramirez. Starting rotation is sneaky good. Zach Eflin, Aaron Civale, who they traded for last year, Zach Littell, Ryan Pepiot, and Taj Bradley. The bullpen will be Pete Fairbanks, Jason Adam, Colin Poche, and 25 other people you've never heard of. We've never heard of who will have a combined ERA around 2.5.
I know we wanted to hit on Yandy a little bit more here. He has been just sensational. So what is your one big Yandy question?
I mean, like, he might be the most underrated hitter in baseball. If you look at WRC plus since the start of 2022, here's how it goes. Judge, good. Yordan Alvarez, stellar. Freddie Freeman, Jose Altuve, Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Yandy Diaz, Juan Soto. Okay, so he has been a better hitter than Juan Soto over the last few seasons. And because it took him a while to become that, and because he plays for the Rays, he's not exactly getting the level of pub that some of these other guys are getting. But this guy absolutely rakes.
Yeah. No, he's, and by the way, like the real breakout in 2022, you know, he still hit only 9 home runs. For him to get to a career high 22 homers last year and I guess win the batting title, which is something that again, like when you're putting the ball in play that often and you're hitting it that hard, that is something that you're going to be able to do. But he's just a really, really special hitter and just a unique profile overall, right? Are we going to see him batting leadoff? Is he as a first baseman? He's a very interesting defender. We've seen him as he's come up as a player. We've seen him play all over the infield. And since he got, I mean, he's been absolutely jacked the whole time, but now he's actually has the batting line to support his physical stature, I would say. And he's amazing. He's one of the best players in baseball. And like, that's the thing. When you think about the Rays, he's never going to jump out as like, oh, well, they have one of the best players in baseball, but they do. And like, that's a big, that goes a long way. And you know, winning 90 plus games every year is having one of the best players in baseball.
My key player though is Taj Bradley, who came up last year and struggled on the mound for Tampa. He is still only 23 years old. His raw stuff is outstanding. He's looked pretty good so far this spring training. And I think, and many people think, he's kind of next in the long line of Rays starters who eventually get traded for the next great Rays starter, right? Glasnow, McClanahan, Chris Archer, Blake Snell, James Shields. They have, I'm definitely forgetting some people. They have a very impressive track record of developing arms in-house. And Bradley looks like the next in line.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the youngest starting pitchers in baseball. He had a 28% strikeout rate, which is obviously, you know, comfortably above league average. And so while the ERA does not look great, like he was really, you know, figuring some things out. And the fact that he was still able to strike out as many batters, he was extremely homer prone, I would say, probably to the degree that this is not sustainable in a good way, right? I mean, to allow basically 2 homers per 9 is ridiculous when your stuff is that good. Now, if you're going to throw a lot at the top of the zone and you're still kind of figuring out your command because you're 22 in the big leagues, like that's understandable. But to your point, like the pure stuff is absolutely there. And right now he's penciled in as the 5. And so that really puts them in a strong position. If he does take a significant step forward, I could imagine him being a huge deal. Anything on Bradley?
Go ahead. I want to hear you wax poetic about Junior Caminero.
Well, yeah, I mean, so you mentioned him, you know, a little bit earlier as in part of the shortstop mix. I think he projects more as a third baseman, but we know Isak Paredes is kind of more entrenched there. It seems like they're much more bullish on him just offensively than defensively. But again, this is also one of the top prospects in baseball. And when you kind of look around at the top 10 prospects in baseball, like landscape, you know, at the very top, we're talking about Jackson Holliday. Of course, we expect him to be the big league so much this year. Jackson Chourio, he signs the big extension. Paul Skeens, Evan Carter, Wyatt Langford, even Dylan Cruz. These are guys we're fully expecting to be in the big leagues this year. And Caminero, we are too. We just don't know exactly where he fits. And he sort of falls into the Jordan Lawler bucket as well, where the hype should still be there. But because it's clouded by the depth chart, it's like unclear exactly when we can get excited. But this dude's raw power is nuts. Like it's honestly, Javi Baez is to me the closest comp in terms of he's not that big of a guy, but the bat speed, the wrist strength, and just how the ball kind of comes off his bat at all kinds of crazy angles is so much fun to watch. So I hope we get to see it. I think we will at some point, but it is, you know, the Rays are going to know when he's ready to do this and where maybe he ends up just being the DH, right? Maybe he's a guy where it's like, we want the bat in there. We don't trust him defensively. I don't know where this all fits, but I hope we see it sooner rather than later.
What makes me laugh on this team? It is their hilarious track record of finding relievers out of nothing to be dominant in short spurts for them. 2021, Andrew Kittredge, 1.88 ERA, makes the All-Star team. Okay. 2022, I would probably give the random reliever award to Jason Adam, 1.56 ERA in 63 innings. Last year, You would have to hand it to Sean Armstrong. 1.38 ERA in 52 innings for him. So, Jordan, who is your pick this year for the Rays reliever to throw 50 innings with an ERA under 2?
Okay, so, I mean, it could just easily be Phil Maton. I know he's a free agent, but I guess he's too famous. So, I mean, Tyler Alexander is an interesting one who they claimed off waivers from Detroit. I'm trying to think, look in the minors, like Colby White was the guy. I thought it was going to be him.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. Jacob Lopez is a really sneaky one. His stuff is not awesome, but his numbers in the minors are really good also as a starter. So, it's Manuel Rodriguez. Manuel Rodriguez, who they acquired from the Cubs. I don't know if he's going to break camp with the team, but that's one I could see them really, really putting it together. But a lot of these guys are still there. And by the way, okay, so Sean Armstrong's ERA is 1.38. The rest of these guys, Kevin Kelly, the Rule 5, Poche, and Adam, and Jake Diekman at 36 years old, all those guys had ERAs under 3, right? So it's not just going to be one guy. And by the way, Robert Stevenson, right? Robert Stevenson did it for, 40 games with them and then just got $40 million or whatever from the Angels. So, and is now injured, I think. It'll be someone. And that's what they do.
Over under 85.5.
I'm going to take the over. Projected for around 86, 87. And I don't care if this division is better. I don't really know how they're going to do it. I just love this rotation, really. And if they stay healthy, I just think that the rotation is going to be one of the more kind of solid ones that they've had for a while. So I'll go over. I don't know if I'm picking them to win the division, but I think over 85.5 pretty easily.
I am low on the Rays, but I will take the over on 85.5. I am just a little worried about how much impact the bottom of this lineup is going to have this season. I am worried about the catcher position. I don't think Jose Siri is like a true talent league average hitter over a full year. I don't think Jose Caballero is going to hit. We haven't seen enough really from Jonathan Aranda quite yet. And so there is, unless Caminero just comes up and is God, which could happen, I'm just a little skeptical about the bottom of the lineup. But over 85 feels bankable. One more team before we take a break. The Toronto Blue Jays, Jordan. Shohei Ohtani does not play for them. Last time I checked, he is not on his way. He is not on a plane.
No. Let's make sure we confirm that part. But who needs him? Because they have Joey Votto now. What do they do? Well, first of all, last year, the Toronto Blue Jays had, 89 wins. You're back in the playoffs. But as far as disheartening postseason performances go, boy, was theirs up there.
They lost to the Twins.
You're not supposed to. That's not supposed to happen. They're the team where they lose the playoff games. Sorry, Minnesota. But it's not true anymore because you beat the Blue Jays. And, we have like the Vladdy Toot Bland. We just had, and then the Berríos decision. Ugly. Like all kinds. It was just terrible vibes going into the offseason. And then it was offset by like, oh my God, we're getting Ohtani. Oh my God, we're going to go get Soto. Oh, we have all these big grand plans and we're going to flush that terrible ending and we're going to go spend a bunch of money and it's all going to be great. And that's not what happened. Certainly until they signed Joey Votto and made everyone in Canada feel warm and fuzzy. This was a tough offseason from a PR standpoint, I would say. Now, listen, it's not like saying that, they failed to get Ohtani. Like, they failed. Like, that's on them. They should be ashamed. Like, no, I'm not going to, like, crush them for not signing Shohei Ohtani. The fact that they're even in the conversation, I think, give them credit for that. But now you wake up, you're here in March 11th, and it's like, all right, how did they get better? They signed Justin Turner. He replaces Brandon Belt. Okay, maybe that's a bit of an upgrade. They bring back Kevin Kiermaier. Okay, that stays the same. Matt Chapman leaves, and now we've got IKF at third base. And you signed Yariel Rodriguez, which is interesting, but a total mystery box in terms of what that's actually going to look like this year. And after that, I mean, what else am I looking at here in terms of an upgrade for a team that should be upgrading to kind of keep up?
Maybe I'm stupid, but I need someone to explain to me how their payroll jumped $22 million, even though is that Turner, Kiermaier?
It's losing arbitration to Vlad Jr. It's basically arb for Bo. For, I guess Bo, they had already agreed upon a deal, but some of their arb guys' contracts just went up, and Turner was $13 million, and some of these other contracts went up. So it is a little bit strange when you consider they didn't seem to get that much better. But now we're just stuck with a team that again, I still looks like a pretty good baseball team. So, like, let's remind people who's on this baseball team.
Behind the dish, Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk, splitting time. Kirk was really disappointing last year. Jansen remains pretty underrated backstop. First base, Vlad Guerrero Jr. Second base is going to be a Kevin Biggio, Davis Schneider, Jamboree. Third base going from Matt Chapman to an IKF Santiago Espinal situation. Shortstop, Bo Bichette. Outfield, Dalton Varsho in left, Kiermaier in center, and Springer in right is a very, very good defensive outfield. Justin Turner is going to DH. The rotation will be Kevin Gausman, Jose Berríos, Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi, and Alec Manoah.
We'll see.
Francis, maybe. Yariel Rodriguez.
Tiedemann,
top prospect whenever he gets up. The bullpen, I actually like this bullpen. Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson, Yimi Garcia, Chad Green. Jordan Schusterman, who is, I'm going to make this is the big question. Who is the third best hitter on the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, that's the thing. And I'm going to filibuster by saying it's way more important that Vlad and Bo get back to super duper star level than whoever the third player is.
Okay, so let me push back on that. Bo was
that. Okay. Yeah, he was a little worse. I mean, I feel like he was trending towards, you know, real MVP consideration. And I feel like he got a little bit, I mean, I know the OPS plus was pretty similar. I guess he was injured, so I guess he just missed more time, but yeah. Okay. Bo was mostly that. We know Vlad wasn't anywhere close to it.
Yeah. Like Bo is a 5-win player. He's a shortstop with an OPS plus over 120. Like that's not a lemon we have to squeeze more juice out of, if that makes sense.
If I had to bet on just third highest OPS plus, the safest bet is honestly Turner at this point, which is maybe not a good thing. But in the way that Springer's been trending, I feel better about Turner kind of having a baseline. But I don't want to give up on George just yet, I don't think. But man, I don't know. He played the whole season. He was healthy. It's like, okay, he wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. He was not a great player. He was not the player that they signed him to be. So when players like that, when it's like, okay, they're playing every day. They're not, it's hard to get too angry, but it's like, well, he was supposed to be here like the all-star outfielder, and he was clearly not that.
He was a league average hitter in an outfield corner, which is, it feels like an opportunity to get more out of. Now, he's going to play this season at 34. He has a lot of miles on his legs. I don't know how much juice is really left. All of his like physical metrics went down. Exit velo, sprint speed, defense, all that stuff took a step back. He like whiffed a lot less. Like he made a lot more contact, but it wasn't necessarily good contact. I'm very intrigued what type of player George Springer is going to be this year. He's my key player for them. The third best hitter on this team. It's really tough. I think Turner is the safest bet, but I would take the field over Turner, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, Davis Schneider is finished his year with 1,000 OPS and his 141 plate appearances. Listen, I mean, I don't care if Davis Schneider is an 800 OPS guy, that's a massive win, right? So, and I don't want to rule that out. Honestly, you know, I don't think that's completely improbable, but we will certainly, you know, find out what that ends up looking like. But my key player is definitely Dalton Varsho, because in terms of like OPS plus that we have seen before he got to Toronto, you know, that was his first year in Toronto, but he had a 108 OPS plus in 2022 and seemed to be trending, like he seemed to unlock something offensively that year. And then last year, while the power numbers were basically the same, and he's still an exquisite outfielder and a valuable player, the offense went way, way, way backwards, right? The OBP sunk below 300. The OPS was below 700. He was a below average hitter. Now, do I think that talent is totally gone? I don't think so. And we know he's going to play enough to kind of make those corrections. He's only 27. Would I bet on him be the third best? But like, I guess the point is if Dalton Varsho can even get back to a league average hitter, it's a reminder of how talented and how valuable he is. Does it make the trade hurt any less? Probably not. But I still think that he can be a really good part of their team. So I wouldn't give up on him completely. But I do think that if he posts an 85 OPS plus again, now we're really not feeling as good about, you know, the decision to bring him in as your long-term outfield solution.
Jordan, what makes you laugh?
Man, I don't know. Well, first of all, Joey Votto is going to make us laugh this year. I think Joey Votto is going to make us smile. Joey Votto, if he is on the Blue Jays, which he himself will tell you is not a guarantee, is absolutely going to probably produce content that makes us laugh. But I don't know. So the Santiago Espinal, them calling him Santiago Goat, and him now falling down the. If you have Santiago Espinal, and with his, you know, player profile and his skill set, and then you have to sign IKF, he's probably not, you know, the Santiago, I would say. Because it's like, Jays, if he's doing it, then you probably don't need IKF.
The Jays have been calling him Santiago Goat online for a while, and I understand that you got to kind of pump your own players up, but I just think it's a great example of how Goat discourse has gotten out of control.
Yeah, right? Exactly. That's my point. It's nothing against him personally. We just have to, we really got to pick our spots a little bit better, I think is my point.
Yeah.
But yeah. I do want to talk about Votto quickly. Like, this is an extremely cool thing. I think the people wondering why did it take this long, because we all wanted him to be on the Blue Jays in November. It really seems like he wanted to see if he could get a major league deal. And then he decided, you know what? I want to play for the Blue Jays more than I want a major league deal. And I think for him, this was the only place where he was going to be willing to go through that process and work his way back, because it meant so much to him to try and play for the Blue Jays in a way that it would not to go to Anaheim and, like, you know, figure it out in Salt Lake. You know, Joey Votto was not going to do that. But he also understands his place. He understands he needs to earn it. And all the everything that he said yesterday and the incredible Jason Stark story today, kind of following him around in his first day as a Blue Jay, is a good reflection of what he cares about, which is earning it, which is fitting in, which is proving that he can do it. And I think doing it with Toronto makes so much sense. And it sounds like he is going to be going to go to Baltimore or go to Baltimore. Sorry. It sounds like he is going to go to Buffalo or be willing to go to Buffalo, which is really kind of amazing, but makes sense when you consider when he's not going to get in a spring training game until like 2 weeks before opening day. So we're all rooting for him. It would be cool to see, but it's possible. He said it himself. He might never play a game for the Blue Jays, and we'll just have to see what happens.
I'm just happy he's not wandering around Toronto alone now, that he can actually spend some time trying to play the sport he spent his whole life playing. Over under 87.5. I will take the under on this. I'm actually worried about Toronto this year. They just didn't get any better. And yeah. I think the other teams around, like, I think the Rays are just as good as last year. I'm skeptical about them, but I don't think their roster got worse. The Orioles are going to be just as good, if not, probably not better, but the Yankees are definitely going to be better. And I have a lot of worries about this window closing without capitalizing on it. I understand that this team has spent money. They're at $236 million with the payroll, which is high for them. But I don't know, man. Like, the lineup is meh, and there's not really as much starting pitching depth as we thought there was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could see a scenario where this goes bad. Like, I don't think they're going to suck. There's no way they suck, but I struggle to see how this team makes a deep run in October.
Well, that I certainly agree with. But I think I'm also going to go slight under. I think they're going to be in the mix for a wild card. But I just, infrastructure wise, and this is going to come up again when we talk about Baltimore, I just trust Baltimore. I trust Tampa just so much more to, you know, kind of get the most out of what they're doing. So, I'm going to go slight under here. I'm not quite as pessimistic as you, but I am still going to go slight under here. All right, Jake, let's take a break. And then when we return, we will talk about the New York Yankees. We just got some news about the New York Yankees. That doesn't sound great. And the Baltimore Orioles. And welcome back to this AL East preview edition of Baseball Barbacast. We have two teams remaining. You might be wondering, are they going to finish with the Orioles or finish with the Yankees? Well, we're going by the over-unders from worst to first. And as of right now, as we record this on Monday morning, the Orioles number is lower than the Yankees. That might change at some point, but let's keep it in order. Let's stay focused and talk about your Baltimore Orioles, Jake. What did they, what happened last year? Did they have a decent season?
This has been the greatest 365 days of Orioles fandom that I can remember. They entered 2023 on the back of an invigorating, though Octoberless 2022, and they won the division. They won the American League East against all the odds, and I still can't believe it's real. They won 101 baseball games. Feels like a blur. Then they got bounced by the Rangers in the ALDS in three straight games, but we don't have to talk about that. Over the winter, two main developments. One was signing Craig Kimbrel. Woohoo. The other was trading for Corbin Burnes, which happened as January turned to February, giving them the real ace at the front of the rotation. Then I guess the last thing would be that the owner, the longtime owner, John Angelos, son of Peter Angelos, they're going to sell the team to David Rubenstein, who has been hailed as a bit of a savior for the Orioles after years of bizarre ownership. Did I miss anything?
I would say it was a pretty rough showing in October, but that was when you do it. You know, you could call it a missed opportunity because they seem to have a really good team. And you could also say, hey, no one expects us to be here. Whatever. It's fine. We're chilling. So while they didn't exactly, you know, give the home crowd much to cheer about, it was still a wonderfully successful season. And there is so much reason to be optimistic coming into this year as well. It seemed for a second there before the Burnes trade, like, really, they're just going to run this back and just do it with Craig Kimbrel. But they finally pushed some chips in. And not even, I mean, listen, Dale Hall and Jordan Ortiz could be good, but the outlook of the team is still looking just tremendous as ever because of how stacked they are on the offensive side. So who is on this baseball team, Jake? Because, you know, we might have some new characters this year.
Adley Rutschman behind the dish. James McCann will be his backup. First base, DH is going to be a rotation-ish. Ryan O'Hearn, I think, at the beginning of the year will get the bulk of at-bats against right-handed pitching. Ryan Mountcastle will get DH at-bats for space at-bats. Second base is going to be Ramon Urias, I believe, to start the year until Jackson Holliday is ready, or Jackson Holliday if he makes the team, though I remain skeptical that he will. Third base every day is going to be Jordan Westberg, who came up last season. Gunnar Henderson, the AL Rookie of the Year, will be at short. The outfield looks like Anthony Santander in right, Cedric Mullins in center, and Austin Hayes in left, with Colton Cowser, who has been phenomenal this spring. Looks like he's going to make the team and get some at-bats in the outfield when someone inevitably gets hurt. I expect Heston Kerstad, another top hitting prospect, to get some DH and outfield at-bats as the season goes on. The rotation right now, Corbin Burnes is the ace. Kyle Bradish is not going to start the year in the rotation. He has had elbow issues. He is throwing. He has not gotten surgery. Got the PRP injection. He's going to try and come back without surgery. I remain skeptical that that ever works for anybody ever. However, we cannot say he's out for the year. We cannot say that. So I'm just going to kind of put him to the side with John Means, who is also not going to be ready to start the year. He seems more likely to come back at some point during the season. But right now, rotation, the way I'm going to project it, because I'm in the mood, Corbin Burnes, Grayson Rodriguez, Dean Kremer, Tyler Wells, Cole Irvin, and John Means whenever he gets back. The bullpen, because Felix Bautista, the mountain, is going to be out for the season after getting TJ. Yennier Cano is the closer, maybe, with Craig Kimbrel also being the closer. And the bullpen, besides that, is a big question mark, with CNL Perez, the left-handed reliever, being the guy I feel the best about. So the one big question here is not just do they have the starting pitching, it is do they have the pitching. We feel good about this lineup being able to score runs. Do they have the arms behind Corbin Burnes to win 101 games again?
Yeah, I mean, again, I brought this up earlier, but this is what I'm going to keep leaning on is the word infrastructure and what they've had in place. You know, maybe they haven't quite done it to the Rays level. It's early in their, you know, competitive window here. But to see what they were getting at it, guys like Danny Coulomb, you know, last year, even what Jacob Webb did until that one really bad pitch to Mitch Garver, there were some really impressive work out of the bullpen. Of course, with Cano and Bautista at the top, but the stuff there maybe speaks a little bit louder than some of those other guys. C.N.L. Perez, you know, we saw him have a lot of success. Maybe Mike Bauman kind of steps into that role. So to that point, it doesn't, no one besides Cano are we excited. And Kimbrel, of course, we're nervous about at best, even if he is probably going to still be pretty decent in the regular season at the very least. It's just enough. I just think that some of these guys are going to be better than we think. I think that some of the guys they actually have coming up, like the Chase McDermott types, or Justin Armbruster, like they have some of those guys that I could see transitioning well into the bullpen and impacting this season in a real way. And I just think that with a lineup that could be, you know, one of the best in baseball again, that should still be a really, really, really good team. So I know these names are not looking super awesome. By the way, Cole Irvin, a guy who I made fun of all of last season as like a really, this was their starting pitching acquisition. He was terrible. He was demoted. He was just like not a factor. He looks fantastic this year. He's throwing harder than ever. So maybe he turns into something, whether it's in the rotation or in the bullpen. So I just really trust everything that's going on in Baltimore. And that's why I am just going to remain optimistic that they could absolutely win the division again.
And that's going to hinge on the guy I'm going to pick as my key player, which is Grayson Rodriguez. Awful. For his first, I think, 10 starts as a big leaguer last season, went down, fixed some things in the minors, came back up, and was one of the best pitchers in the league in the second half. His stuff looked outstanding. Then he started in the postseason game and kind of just pissed his pants on the big stage. He was expected to be the three behind Bradish and Burns, with Bradish not being on the roster to start the year. There's going to be more on Grayson's shoulders. Can he do that in the regular season? Yes. Like, I'm very confident in Grayson's ability to start every 5 days and post and log innings. I am more skeptical about him being able to do it in the playoffs. I think he needs to learn from what went wrong last year. He got sped up quite a bit. You could tell in that postseason start, his fastball command was all over the place. But he, whether he's like a 4 ERA guy in 25 starts or a 3.5 ERA guy in 32 starts, that's a big difference for this Orioles team because of the, like, there are a lot more question marks at the back end of the rotation now.
Yeah, I mean, again, his season was three parts, right? It was the initial go where it was like, oh boy, this is Major League Baseball is hard. He comes back, he's amazing. And then that final sour chapter where you go into the offseason wondering, but like, I don't think that should diminish everything that he had accomplished and kind of developed, especially in the second half. And that's why I think there's still so much reason to be excited about him. I'm going to go with Cano as my key player. Listen, there's so many of these hitters. It's kind of hard to sort through with like the two different levels of the veterans that have been there forever, who we feel like we know what they are. But Mullins is maybe more of a question mark. But then that second wave is just so talented with, of course, Jackson Holliday. But even with like Gunner is just so good. Like, I know Adley is the face of the team and he should be. And like that's for sure as a catcher. But Gunner is the one who can also be one of the best players in baseball, let alone what we're expecting from Holliday. But I keep going back to the pitching. While I do believe that some guys are going to emerge that we're not expecting, Cano was so good, and then we started to see some struggles. I just, if he is, like, what that split ends up being between him and Kimbrel, maybe he is just slotted into the eighth. Maybe that helps him. Maybe he goes back to being the most dominant version of himself if he is in the eighth inning. So Cano, because he came out of nowhere and just because he was that dominant, I'm really curious what his season ends up looking like. All right, Jake. What makes you laugh about the Orioles?
All the prospects look the same.
Yeah.
This has been really noted online. Got a lot of blonde hair, a lot of blue eyes, a lot of gringos. Now, the reason for this, I'm thinking about writing maybe on this, reporting this out at some point, but like the biggest reason for this is that the Orioles did not invest in Latin America significantly until, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And so there's like a tape delay in terms of the types of prospects that are coming up their system. And because baseball is, you know, whiter than it used to be, you end up with a scenario where all of their prospects look very similar. But it is funny. The pictures of them are funny. Colton Cowser, thank you for having a beard. That is much appreciated. If we could get like some sort of hair distinguishing feature between Gunner and Adley and Heston Kerstad and Jackson Holliday, that would be great. I think Adley you can distinguish because he's just so much wider. Like he physically, his shoulders are different. Holliday and Kerstad are the ones I worry the most about in terms of mixing up the two of them from afar.
Well, Kerstad's way bigger. So I think size-wise, I think you'll be fine in that respect. I think that's what you're going to really have to lean on. But, you know, there's a Kobe Mayo looks slightly different.
Yeah.
But it is objectively hilarious. So maybe that'll change at some point.
One more Orioles thing I want to mention. Like Adley Rutschman, who you mentioned is the face of this team. Last year, he hit 20 home runs and had a 128 OPS plus because it's really hard to hit home runs in Baltimore now that the stadium is different. But he walked a lot, right? He had a 374 OEP and he got on base. And I think there's a segment of the Orioles fan base that's like, okay, do the next level. And there's a chance there is a next level, but there's a chance that this is what he is, right? A very good hitting, elite defensive catcher who handles the staff well, who never gets to his full offensive potential because he is an everyday catcher. Go look at like the best numbers of JT Realmuto's career, and they are very, very good. They are not up there with the best hitters in the league because to do that and be an elite defensive catcher is very hard. That being said, I keep thinking about the home run derby and Adley Rutschman, Jordan. Just the raw juice this guy has is in there. He has it. And I think at some point we will see that over an extended stretch. Whether or not it happens this season, we will see.
Yeah, I think the other interesting thing with him is his splits as a switch hitter. I remember he in the minors was incredible from the right side of the plate, you know, mashing lefties until his rookie year when he sucked as a right-handed hitter. And then last year kind of switched back where he was much better as a right-handed hitter, you know, more walks than strikeouts, you know, nearly a 900 OPS batting right-handed. Now, he's still really good lefty too, but to me, that was kind of the key to him unlocking more power. I mean, the OBP is what's driving the OPS plus, as far as I'm concerned. Like, the slugging is still only average, but for a catcher, it's just absurd. He's on top of the fact that we know how good he is on defense in every respect. So, no, he's amazing. He is. I agree that, like, when you're that good, it's so easy to just be like, oh, just get better again. Just get better again. Just get better again. Like, it's not that simple. If he's this for the rest of his career, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, and it's not even going to be close. Over under 90.5. I'm taking the over here. Pretty easily. It's not even a question. I will say the projections have them more closer to 85, and that is probably because of the pitching and there's so much unknown there. But no, that's just not really a hard one for me. This is over.
Projection systems have hated the Orioles since the dawn of time, Jordan. Come on now.
That's true. Your Orioles, man. How about them? Let's go to the Yankees of New York. Jake, we got a little bit of a news here as we record this. So it's about noon on Monday here on the East Coast. Feels like 11. Shouts out Daylight Savings. We hate you so much. Garrett Cole's having an MRI in his pitching elbow. We don't know if we're going to have more news about that today. Probably not. But this is also not news I've ever seen before. I've not seen these words together, Jake. I've not seen these words in the same sentence before. And that is enough reason to be like, interesting.
One can have elbow discomfort, get an MRI, and not need to get reconstructive elbow surgery. Okay, just a reminder, that is a thing that happens all the time. Also true is, when someone gets reconstructive elbow surgery, this is how the timeline starts, right? Discomfort, MRI. Bad news. We are currently at the first bad news phase. And so it is impossible to draw conclusions yet. I think Yankees fans can and should be concerned, mostly because Garrett Cole has been an emblem of consistency and health during his time with the Yankees. He has been so reliable.
He's barely been injured his whole career.
Barely been injured. And so I think that is a reason to worry. I don't think it's a reason to burn down the stadium yet. That might be next week. But for now, I think it is a wait and see, worry a little bit, not a lot of it.
All right, let's preview the Yankees as if that's not hanging over their entire organization. Last year, they were a bad baseball team. You could say they still finish above 500. I don't think they care. I think they know it was an embarrassment, a stain on their franchise history to go 82-80 to finish in fourth place. And while there were some legitimate excuses you could have made on the health side and say, yep, well, that happens sometimes. You just get really injured. That is true. They were also bad anyway. So, but they know that and they acknowledged it. And they said, you know what we need? We need Juan Soto. Everyone knows we need Juan Soto. Let's go get Juan Soto. They got Juan Soto. They knew they needed more pitching with the amount of injuries they had on the staff. And that was before Gerrit Cole had to get an MRI. And so they go out and get Marcus Stroman, which is another fit that I mean, regardless of any of the personality fit, I love this move. I thought this was one of my favorite moves of the whole offseason. I think he's a fantastic fit for them. And then they also traded for a guy in the Red Sox. Alex Verdugo is also on their team now, which is a truly fascinating decision. I know that gets kind of lost. And then Trent Grisham also comes over, and the Soto deal is going to be part of their outfield mix.
Verdugo the best argument for abolishing the Yankees facial hair policy. This guy needs a beard.
Tough look.
It's an odd look. Let's give him a pass, maybe. A thought.
Yeah. Definitely too late there, but he will be there. He will be on the team. A very important part of their outfield, which could be a true journey defensively. But let's go through that. Let's go through that lineup. Who is on the New York Yankees, Jake?
Behind the dish, Austin Wells and Jose Trevino. Wells, who I mentioned as a breakout candidate last week, and then he proceeded to hit very well right after and before I said that. Shouts out to Austin Wells. He looks awesome. I think there's a chance he's one of the best, 15 catchers in baseball this year. Anthony Rizzo, first base, huge year for him after he had the concussion situation last year that was misdiagnosed or undiagnosed. And then after that happened, he was like, could not hit. And then he had vertigo symptoms and then he missed the end of the season. He's looked healthy so far in spring. I'm hopeful that he can kind of find out. He can turn the clock back a little bit and remain a very productive hitter. Second base, Gleyber Torres, who you love, always have loved him. Free agent at the end of the season. DJ LeMahieu at third base. That's a weird one. LeMahieu has kind of taken a step back the last couple seasons after he was like an MVP candidate for 2 years in a row. Anthony Volpe, I think he's going to get a lot better in his sophomore season. He reportedly has a new contact-oriented approach at the plate. I think he got a little bit too home run happy last year. I'm a Volpe guy. I'll always be high on him. The outfield, Verdugo in right, Judge in center, and Soto in left is how they're going to start things. Grisham is going to mix in and play center. That'll push Judge to right, I would imagine, and Verdugo to left. And that would then send Soto to DH. Giancarlo Stanton is set to be the DH. What I like about this Yankees team is that they have built the lineup to withstand the inevitable Stanton injury. Okay. Whenever it happens, Soto's going to DH and they'll have a good defensive outfield. If Stanton is good and plays 130 games, that's a good problem to have. And so that compared to previous seasons where the Yankees were kind of banking on Stanton, which is nuts, they have built a Stanton-proof enough lineup for this season. Pitching rotation. Gerrit Cole will be the ace for the Yankees. Expect him to make 35 starts.
Definitely. Pitching on opening day. Woo-hoo.
On opening day, 230 innings, reigning AL Cy Young. I think he's the best pitcher in the world. I have no worries at all about anything health-related. Cool. Speaking of no health-related issues, Carlos Rodon and Nestor Cortez Jr. are both in this rotation, coming off really sturdy, dependable seasons in 2023. Both of these guys were hurt for a lot last year. Both were bad when they pitched. They have both been all-stars relatively recently. They're both lefties. I am a little worried about Carlos and his fastball velocity. Let's see how things go. Marcus Stroman and Clark Schmidt will be the back of the rotation. I am high on Clark Schmidt. I think he turned a corner in the second half of the season. I think he can be a very legit, reliable guy. Will Warren will be the arm they call up when they need another guy. Luis Gil will also be in the starting mix as well. Bullpen, Clay Holmes, Jonathan Loaisiga, Caleb Ferguson, Ian Hamilton. As little faith as I have about the Yankees to have like the second level of hitters come up and be contributors when the first level gets hurt. And that was a big reason why they stunk last year. I have faith on the pitching side. Like, I think Matt Blake, who's their pitching coach, and all the pitching, like the whole pitching infrastructure the Yankees have, I think gets the most out of run prevention. And so even if they lose guys to injury, and even if the second level of the bullpen is a little anonymous, I think they're still going to get outs just because I believe in what's behind it.
I agree. I mean, again, seasons that guys like Hamilton and Nick Ramirez, you know, who's not even projected to make the team, had. But, you know, Michael King, that's 100 really quality innings that they don't have this year. Obviously, they've replaced it in other ways. Not that they shouldn't have done that trade, but it's going to be not a lot of new guys in the mix here. I mean, that's what it should be after you have a season like they do. But it still remains the question. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Rodon and Cortes Jr., but, you know, Stroman had some really bizarre injury issues last year as well. And Clark Schmidt is coming off what is by far, you know, the most innings he's thrown in a season. So, if it does, though, I like what they got. But as we started the segment off with, it's just you never know. It can torpedo a season pretty quickly.
So the one big question we had for the Yankees, which I wrote last week, was does the pitching stay healthy? And good morning, Yankees fans. Now you're right. We're at a situation where it's hard to feel great about all five of the starting pitchers from a health perspective. And before this morning, Gerrit Cole, it would have been the most dependable pitcher in baseball.
Yeah. Well, and even again, like we learned this with Lucas, it's just like, it's all random. It's, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's pretty random. Like you're not going to be able to know, like, oh, he's made every start for the last 5 years. It's just like, this is unfortunately how it goes. And I know, by the way, I know there was a story recently from Ken Rosenthal about, you know, Keith Meister talking about the surgeon talking about like, this is bad, guys. We're getting all these injuries because of what pitchers are prioritizing now. I think that is an interesting conversation that is worth having. But still, if you look at the guys like Gerrit Cole, it's like, well, he's been doing the same thing for the last decade. And now he gets hurt now. It's just, I don't know, whatever. I don't want to jump too far ahead on the Cole stuff. But as we've seen, it is at least a reminder of how quickly these things can turn.
Who leads the 2024 New York Yankees in starts on the mound?
In starts on the mound. You know what? Gerrit Cole. Yeah, I said it. Gerrit Cole, he's going to do it. I this news today is no concern to me whatsoever. You're welcome, Yankees fans. I'm staying some positive energy on this Monday morning. Gerrit Cole will make the most starts.
Attaboy. Who's your key player for them?
Gleyber Torres. I just think that for him to have the breakout that he had last year amidst the crappy season that they were having got lost. But now the fact that he is entering his age 27 season and could be a free agent after this year, it's never going to usurp the Soto and Cole conversations, the Cole opt-out and of course Soto. But man, I mean, this is a guy that also, and he's been on record saying, I want to be a Yankee for life, right? And sure, I guess sometimes you hear guys say that and what does that really mean? But I'm really curious to what degree the Yankees are going to prioritize him, because it seemed like they've been trying to get rid of him for years. And then just when they finally were going to get rid of him, they needed him more than ever. And it didn't matter because they were bad. But now it's like Peraza's doesn't really necessarily, you know, he's injured now. Like he doesn't seem like a very obvious part of their future. We know Volpe is at short, but I don't know. Maybe there is a future for Gleyber in New York. And I think that that's really interesting considering how we've talked about him for the last few years.
I'll take Anthony Rizzo. I mentioned it before, but the Yankees need a third bopper behind Soto and Judge, who I think will be two of the best hitters in the world. That's not a hot take. And I think Rizzo, if healthy, can still be that guy. Jordan, what is something that makes us laugh? For me, it is how high can Soto and Cole jack up the price? Soto, a free agent at the end of the season. Cole has an opt-out. If Cole wins the Cy Young again, which, okay, if his elbow's fine, like probably the front runner to win the Cy Young this year, sure, in the American League. And sure, Juan Soto is probably a top 3-4 pick to win the MVP, mm-hmm, in the American League.
Yep.
If both those things happen, that's going to be a very expensive development for one Mr. Steinbrenner, and that'll be hilarious.
Well, I was just going to say, they just did this with Judge, right? They watched Judge jack the price up in the contract year of a lifetime. So, like, it's not like it's going to catch them off guard. And they also know exactly what they're signing up for. If Soto hits 60 home runs, what are they going to complain? Like, yeah. Great. This is fantastic. So it'll be challenging when we get there, but they're not going to care about it too much, I don't
so
think.
So for Cole, I mean, now it's even more interesting if he gets hurt, but let's say he's good, right? He has the opt. He has four 144 remaining on the deal. He will opt and get more than that. If Jacob deGrom got five 185 last winter, at a similar age, Cole is going to be able to ask for at least that. That is the floor. God. Okay. I think the most likely thing is that he stays with the Yankees. I think he really loves being a Yankee, and I do think he really does want to win there. However, the funniest scenario is that the Yankees are mid and Cole and Soto are amazing and they both opt, and Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, pays them both an obscene amount of money to live in Queens. That is the funniest scenario. The idea of that makes me laugh. I'm sorry, Yankees fans. That makes me laugh. I'm sorry.
And then the Yankees sign Pete Alonso.
And the Yankees sign Pete Alonso. Yeah. The one last thing I want to say about the Yankees, and this is such a stupid take, but I'm going to deliver it. Aaron Judge, underrated now. Underrated now. He is so good. And if he had not had that weird freak injury last season where he ran into the wall, we would have had another uncomfortable Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani thing where, like, for MVP, where Ohtani would have won and deserved it, but Judge would have been incredible. I mean, hit 37 home runs in 367 at-bats. He had a 175 OPS plus. Like, I think he is the best hitter in the world. He would be my pick.
Yeah, I mean, that just how him and Soto interact as far as, I mean, this is true for the Dodgers too. We're going to talk about just like how the lineup functions, because like who's drawing more walks? Like I would still bet on Soto. I just don't know how they're going to do this.
I mean, dude, Soto's going to run like a 430 OBP in front of Judge, who's going to hit 53 home runs.
It's going to be higher than 430. It's good. I mean, he ran a 465 in 2021.
That's what I'm going to say. The over-under is 93.5, and I'm going to take the over. I have a lot of question marks about the Yankees organizationally on the hitting side still. And I think their issue last year is they built the ship out of old wood and it sank. Okay. I love that they made this as Stanton-proof as they can. I am very worried about the health of the pitching. If the Yankees are Judge, Soto, a lot of question marks, I'll take that over what the Blue Jays have every freaking day, dude.
Oh, every day. No. I mean, Judge health-wise is a question mark, but that's not a concern with Soto. So, Stanton is the thing that could kind of kick this into overdrive. But no, I totally agree. It's gonna be a spectacle, and most people are going to hate it so very much.
Over under 93.5.
I'm gonna go under, but I think the Yankees are gonna be right in. I think that this year it's gonna be more compressed, and let's just do it right now. I'm going actually pretty similar to last year. I'm going Orioles, Rays, Yankees, Blue Jays, Red Sox. And I think it's just going to be more compressed. I think that they will, like, the division winner will be like closer to 93 or 94 than 100. So it's just going to be kind of squished in more.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'll go O's, Yankees, Rays, Blue Jays, Red Sox.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So you're sticking with Yankees more. I don't know. I'm buying all in on Baltimore.
They've won Soto and Aaron Judge.
They do. Yeah. It's pretty good. All right. I think we previewed the AL East. It seems like we did that. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz, the producer, and Brett Rader, of course, for helping make this show possible. You can email us at baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com. Getting a lot of feedback that they would like a fantasy league, a Baseball Barbiecast fantasy league. We're going to work on those details. I'm just going to say, well, what's probably going to work is we're going to pick a date and time, and if you can make it, we will try and pick the people that can definitely make that time. So Correct. It'll probably be much closer to opening day, but stay tuned for that. We're gonna try and hammer out those details because I think that would be a lot of fun. We'll preview the AL or NL West, I believe, on Wednesday. Is that what's coming up next, Jake?
I think so. I think it's the National League West.
Yeah, I think we're doing the National League West on Wednesday. The National
League West, which is the American League East of the National League.
Wow, great comp. Thank you all for listening. That will be our next division preview. We will talk to you all very soon. Goodbye.